Hello everyone, and welcome to episode 8 of the Skype Show. Today I'm joined by Andrew Morpeth and Josh Blaylock. In session 1, we'll be talking about least cost and location-based routing and continuing our theme down the enterprise voice route within Skype for Business. In session 2, Andrew Morpeth, our Office Services and Servers MVP, he'll be delivering a presentation and demonstration on his Call Flow Manager application, which is the new application designed to manage your response groups within Skype for Business and Link. In session 3, Josh will be delivering a session on Skype for Business Hybrid. And in session 4, we'll be having a general discussion on the new features and new things that have happened within Skype for Business ecosystem in the last month or so. So moving on to session 1, the least cost and location-based routing. Now, when we talk about least cost routing, what do we actually mean? Well, least cost routing is the method we use in order to route a PSTN bound call down the cheapest possible PSTN route. Now, when we think about least cost, we immediately assume that the cost is just purely the per pence per minute call that you pay going through your telco provider. So normally this will be the telco provider located in the country in which you're trying to call. However, there is another consideration when you calculate least cost, in that you need to calculate whether you need investments in your internal WAN infrastructure in order to route calls over WAN links to the destination in order to achieve least cost. So in this event, you need to decide whether it is cheaper for you to invest in a WAN infrastructure if it's required, or whether simply paying international call rate for a portion of calls is a cheaper alternative. So those are two important scenarios to think of out of the box, really. So how do we implement least cost routing for Skype for Business? Well, you'd be pleased to know that least cost routing is fundamentally the concept of Skype for Business voice. So whether you have one gateway in your deployment, and you can connect all your, create your PSTN usages and your voice routes to this gateway for all calls, then you are, by definition, deploying least cost routing. When you start to expand into a multinational, perhaps, or even a global company, then least cost routing comes into its own, where you have a much more granular control over how best to route your calls. So here in this example here, I thought it was the best way to try and show it in a diagram. We have a multinational or a global company with three gateways and three routes to the PSTN network. Now we have a US gateway with the carrier of AT&T. We have a gateway in Mexico with a carrier of Telmex, and then we have a UK gateway where the carrier is BT, and we could all route to the PSTN that way. So we can immediately see that we have three routes to the PSTN that we could take for any particular call. So how do we decide on the best route? So the best route, as I said, is determined by the cost per minute that it takes to call a number through each telco based on the calling destination number. So for instance, it might be, in this instance, if we wanted to call a number in EMEA, for instance, maybe want to call a number in France, then the cost per minute for calling from the UK to France could be around about 12 pence a minute, while calling France from Mexico, for instance, could be 50 pence a minute. So it would seem natural that when we want to call France, we want the calls to route through the UK gateway as a preference. So when we, how do we do this? So from our previous sessions where we talked about dial plans, normalization rules, voice policies, PSTN usages, etc., we could determine the full call flow and process that call will go through when placed. So here, let's assume that the user is in Mexico. And to make it simple, we have a voice policy of unrestricted applied to this user. So unrestricted voice policy has access to all these PSTN usages here. And these PSTN usages have access to all these routes. So what are these routes and what's the difference between green and yellow? So the green route is the primary route. And if you look at the voice routing table within Skype for Business, you'll notice that each route has a priority. So in the same manner as normalization rules are processed in the top from the top of the table down to the bottom table, the same applies to the routing priority. So here we want to set the primary route at higher priority than the secondary route. So this least cost routing here is example also includes a failback route, because ultimately if you want to if your primary route is down or is unavailable, or perhaps you've got call admission control policy in play on the route between the client and the preferred PSTN gateway, then we want to still be able to send the call out to the PSTN using alternative routes. So using our example of being in Mexico and wanting to call France, we can see here that we have a voice routing route called EMIR. And what we're saying here is that any call that has an international code between 30 and 49, we're assuming that this is an EMIR call. So we want to be able to send this call out through the UK gateway. So we assign this route the gateways of the UK. And when we call France, that's where it's going to go. Now here, on this route here, you could have call admission control policies like I explained it just a few seconds ago. So in the event of bandwidth policies being applied onto this route, we want to find an alternative. So therefore, the failover route to EMIR using the local Mexican gateway would be used in that event. So why do we have the trunk configuration here placed on this EMIR route? On the primary route and not on the backup route. Well, simple, really, it's all down to how the telco will accept your calls from, to them, and whether they will allow the call to progress over their network. So there are a number of rules here. So when the Mexican user is calling the number in France, they're going to have a caller ID. Which is going to reference a Mexico DDI. Now, probably this Mexico DDI is going to be owned by Telmex, and therefore BT can't prove that you own this DDI. So probably in most cases, what BT will do is that they will deny the call, and then the call will fail over to the Mexican gateway, and then you end up paying international call rate for that call to France. So by doing calling number translation rules and translating the user's caller ID into a service number or a DDI that BT can prove ownership of, you can allow that call to go through. So this number here, this is usually either a mainline office number within the location of the gateway. So in this case, you might have a UK office, so you might want to have the UK reception number showing as the caller ID. Or alternative, you could design an auto attendant that when the PSTN caller calls back this number, they will receive a directory lookup and able to call back the Mexican user based on extension dialing. But we also have a call number translation here. And whilst this is not strictly necessary in every scenario, in Mexico, there is a PSTN governance rule that says that international numbers should be prefixed with a 9 before the international code. But obviously in the UK, we don't need to do that, and we just need to send the standard E164 number to the gateway. So this called number translation rule will remove the 9 and replace it with a properly formatted E164 number. And therefore the call will progress as to the PSTN as we expect. Whilst we don't need it here on the backup route, because obviously we're adhering based on standard normalization to the to Telmex's and Mexican PSTN regulations. And we can do similar setups for North America, and we can also do similar setups for national numbers within Mexico, where we're saying that, you know, the primary route for local rate numbers is through the Mexican gateway. But if the Mexican gateway is down, perhaps we want to reroute that through to the US because that's the cheapest alternative route. Don't have to have that. It's entirely down to your voice design. So this, in essence, is least cost routing, a very high level example. I'm moving on to what location-based routing is. So location-based routing is slightly different to least cost in that the route to the PSTN is determined by your client location. And this client location is determined by this MS-subnet attribute that is in every single SIP invite message that's sent by the user. So this MS-subnet attribute is used to look up the location database to see if that subnet belongs to a network site. If that subnet belongs to a network site, then that network site is then used to determine whether there has any voice routing policies assigned to that site. If there's a voice routing policy assigned to the site and location-based routing is enforced or enabled on your deployment, then this voice routing policy overrides any voice policy that you have attached to the user account specifically. So this can be for when you have a traveling user between sites, that, you know, that the primary site is in the US, for instance, and they want to travel to Mexico, that when they are actually in Mexico, they will adhere to the Mexican location voice route rather than using the US-based gateways for call routing as they normally would. Location-based routing doesn't automatically mean that you will be prevented from toll bypass. Toll bypass is something that we'll come on to in a moment, and you can enable location-based routing without enforcing toll bypass. So why would you want to allow location-based routing but not enforce toll bypass? So there are a number of reasons. So if you want to enforce toll bypass, then the only reason why you would be enforcing the prevention of that is due to local PSTN laws. But there are benefits for employing location-based routing in countries or in locations where this is not in play, but it's more beneficial for you to employ location-based routing to achieve least cost routing, which we'll come on to a little bit later on. So when this user has been determined that he is or she is in Mexico, then they're going to have a dial plan assigned to them, whether this is a site global or even user-based dial plan. So in this case, it's a Mexican dial plan, but it could be a US dial plan, it could be a UK dial plan, etc. It doesn't really matter. But as long as they can normalize a number to the accepted format, then the call will follow the network site's PSTN voice routing policy and PSTN usages. So here we can see that it follows this usage. It will have a voice route and a trunk configuration. So again, on the trunk configuration, we'll have called number and calling number translation rules, and that will be to remove any foreign DDIs as caller IDs, like we explained in least cost routing. And then the call will go out through the local gateway and into the PSTN. So when we talk about toll bypass, so in about, I think there's about 67 countries worldwide that have toll bypass laws. And this basically means that when a user places a call to the PSTN from a SIP endpoint, that they will have to use the local telco provider to send and receive that call. So for instance, we cannot employ least cost routing in a toll bypass situation. So there are a few limitations enforced by toll bypass that you will need to think about when you're enforcing toll bypass or preventing toll bypass rather. So the first thing that I want to talk to you about is about external users. So remember when I'd said about the MS subnet attribute to determine the location? Well, external users will not have this subnet available to them. So we can't do location-based routing for external users connected in via the Edge server. So in this case, all calls that they make to the PSTN will follow their standard voice user voice policies and PSTN routes. When you enable a gateway or to prevent toll bypass, what you do is you associate that gateway with a network site. Once you do that, then no other site in your deployment can use this gateway to make or receive calls. So whilst this is pretty doesn't affect the standard user who's in that physical location 100% of the time, if you do have traveling users between sites, then we can come into situations whereby calls don't quite happen in the way that you expect them to. So in this scenario here, let's consider a boss admin scenario. So perhaps you have a boss who is in the United States office and he travels to India, for instance. So obviously his voice policies and dial plans are going to be assigned and from the US pool, and obviously that his voice routing will prefer to go out via the US gateways. Similarly, he will have a DDI assigned to him, which will be terminated on the US SBCs. So when he travels to India, for instance, an Indian office, and someone calls from the PSTN, he's not going to be able to receive those calls because that's breaking toll bypass regulations. Similarly, if he has a delegate assigned or to his account, then what will happen is that the delegate will be able to receive that call and pick the call up on behalf of the boss, but the admin won't be able to transfer that call to the boss while he's in India. Well, the boss may call out to the PSTN using the Indian gateway, but he will have his caller ID replaced by a local Indian number. So the other limitations that we have is some control limits over access to the PSTN. So what happens is that in a normal scenario, when you apply user-based voice policies and PSTN usage, you can control the level of access that that user has, so that you can refine them down to calling only national numbers or national mobile, certain international numbers, services, emergency services, etc. However, when you employ location-based routing, obviously you have to assign a voice routing policy to a network site. That voice routing policy will contain PSTN usages, and they use the plural because you can assign more than one to that voice routing policy. And then when you assign that to a site, anybody within that site is going to have that voice routing policy. So when you design your location-based routing, you need to design it for sufficient access to the PSTN for all your users within that site. If you want to segment your users further, then you'll have to consider segmenting your site's LAN into different network segments, so you can apply different voice routing policies to each network site. What I want to talk about now is conferencing limitations for when toll bypass is prevented. So the first situation I want to talk to you about is when you have two Skype for Business users within the same network site that's enforced for toll bypass. So in any of these situations, it's important to point out that when I talk about conferencing, it's down to whether the conference organizer is within a site where toll bypass is prevented. So in this scenario, perhaps I am in India and I want to talk to Josh, and he's also in India. So I make a peer-to-peer voice call to Josh. Then we decide that we need to invite another user to the call. Now, because my first contact was Josh, then I'm determined in the same location so that anybody else can join that. We can invite anybody else to that conference. So that includes a Skype for Business user from a different, from a site, the same site, and a Skype for Business from another site or an unknown site. So an unknown site is any subnet that hasn't been defined in your network, subnets and sites, or external connections. And when we talk about user joining for a PSTN endpoint, we're talking about the person on the other end of a normal telephone line. So in the scenario where I'm in India and I make a peer-to-peer audio call to say Andrew in New Zealand, then in this scenario I can add other SIP users. So that'd be users from the same site I'm in, or the users from Andrew's site, or even another site of federated users. We can all join into this conference, but we can't allow anybody to dial in. So when I'm in India, for instance, and I'm talking to a person on the PSTN, and perhaps I need to invite a colleague into this conversation to help me process the call, help me solve it. So in this situation where I'm already calling a PSTN endpoint via the Indian gateway, I can only add a Skype for Business user within the Indian site. I can't add in Andrew in New Zealand, for instance, and or anybody else. Similarly, I can't add anybody else in from the PSTN. So there are some restrictions over conferencing, and these conference limitate these the conferencing toll bypass prevention is not enabled by default. So you're going to have to add this server application to your front end servers and enable it in order for conference toll bypass prevention to come in force. So moving on to location based on least cost routing, I touched on this slightly before. Though this is a mixture of location based and least cost routing, as it said. So what here? What, so remember when I said that the network site can be associated a voice routing policy, and the voice routing policy can be associated with multiple PSTN usages. So in this case, where you don't actually have to prevent toll bypass, and you just want to do location-based least cost routing. So consider a scenario. Let's pick a smaller scenario whereby it's a UK business, and let's say they have three or four offices dotted around the UK in different areas, and these offices all have a survivable branch appliance. So in the UK, we have a choice of dialing the six-digit subscriber number or the full area code and subscriber number. So when we're within the same area code, we can dial just a six-digit subscriber, and then BT or whoever will determine that actually they need to append the area code to that call and route it accordingly. So there's been a number of scenarios whereby I've had this request, because user dialing habits is that they predominantly dial the PSTN endpoints within the same area. So they don't want to have to dial the area code all the time. So we can do this with location-based routing and least cost routing. And we can put in site locations, voice routing policies that will actually prepend the correct area code to any numbers that are six digits. So there's that scenario. The other scenario is a similar scenario to the one I showed you for least cost, and whereby we're in Mexico. And when I am in Mexico, or anybody's in Mexico for that matter, they want to follow the least cost voice routes based on the Mexican DAO voice routing policy. So here we'd still determine the subnet, we assign the voice routing policy to the network site, then we assign all the PSTN usages that we want to allow these users to use when they determine to be within this site, and then these voice routes will connect to the relevant gateways and egress out to the PSTN in the manner which you expect. And that is basically, in a nutshell, what location-based least cost routing is and toll bypass. I hope you found this this useful, and thank you very much for watching this session. I now have the great honourable pleasure of introducing our first guest, Andrew Morpeth. Welcome, Andrew.
Hey everyone, my name is Andrew Morpeth. I'm a Skype for Business MVP. I'm going to talk to you today about a product called CallFlow Manager. It's a response group management software for Link and Skype for Business. It's been a pet project of mine for quite some time, but over the last 12 months it's got some considerable development time. The purpose of CallFlow Manager is really to fill what I see a bit of a gap in and some of the limitations in the response group management tools natively. So what I consider to be the main problem is the amount of interfaces. So you have the Skype for Business control panel, which you manage your groups and your queues within. You have another interface where you manage the workflow component, and then in PowerShell further you manage your business hours and holiday groups. So what I wanted to do is bring end-to-end response group management into a single interface. I wanted to simplify that interface, make it more intuitive. So things like SIP domains are pre-populated, available numbers can be searched within the interface. I wanted to be able to manage the 10 IVR options that are possible via very complex, hard-to-manage PowerShell. So you can now manage within this tool 10 levels, two levels deep. And you can also seamlessly switch between the IVR type mode and the standard hunt group mode if you choose to. So you might initially create a workflow that's a hunt group, and then later on you might want to turn it into an IVR, so you don't have to recreate that. You can just turn that functionality on. And also I've added some additional things, some phone number inventory, which essentially just looks at your unassigned number ranges and compares it to what you've assigned, and allows you to search using the response group search. Among other things, you can search for workflows and queues and things like that. So I think we'll jump straight into a demo now, just to show you the power of this tool, give you a real feel for what it can do. So let's just jump over to a demo.
So let's create a workflow. Okay, so demo one, and we will grab a number, as I was talking about just before, from the unassigned numbers range. So what I can do is I can jump down here and unassigned, and in a second we should get some unassigned numbers back. Right, so I can select that. Here, okay, and there we have it. We've got a number. Ultimately, this will pre-search for you, so you don't have to come down here and do it. But for now, the search functionality is at the bottom of each page. So other things you could do is you could search a workflow, for example. You might want the SIP address to use in the queues, for example. So I could search the workflow. Now I've got the SIP address there, I can copy it out, and if I was in queues, for example, I could paste that in as a destination SIP address for an overflow or timeout. Okay, so we'll just jump back up here and we'll grab that number and pop it into the display number. We'll assign a pull. We will give it a SIP address of demo one, and we'll assign the domain, the SIP domain. Give ourselves a language and a welcome message. Okay, and we'll just give it a time zone, where I'm based here in Auckland, New Zealand. And what we can do is now track down to the bottom here, and we're just going to create a basic workflow at this stage. So not an IVR. You can see over here IVR mode is actually turned off. Creating a basic one. Let's give it a music file. Okay, there we go. So that's pretty much all we need to fill out. So let's just go ahead and save that. Okay, so that's saved. Right, so what else might we want to do? We might want to assign business hours, or we might want to assign some holidays. So let's first do business hours. So right now we have a couple defined, but what if we've forgotten to add some business hours and we want to add some different ones in there right now? A common problem for me in the native tools is that I jump into workflows, start creating it, and then realize, haven't created a queue. I haven't created business hours, so I'd have to jump out, go into PowerShell, create those things, maybe go into the Skype for Business link control panel, create some queues, and then I'd have to come back to the workflow interface and refresh the page, and then I'd be able to. So in this, in CallFlow Manager's case, that's not a problem anymore, because what I can do is I can jump over to business hours. Okay, so let's just call this demo business hours. Make sure that we put it into the same pool as the workflow will be in, otherwise it won't be made available to us. Okay, and let's add that. Okay, so now we've got a empty container here that we can put business hours into. So we've got some predefined time ranges as well as individual days here. So we've got Monday to Friday, Monday to Saturday, and Monday to Sunday as those predefined ranges. We're going to go Monday to Friday. 8 to 5, that's fine. Let's add those in. Okay, so you can see there we've got Monday to Friday here, 8 to 5 for all of those. I could also individually go and specify, say, Saturday, and we may have shorter hours on Saturday, and I could go ahead and add those in. Okay, so let's save that now. Okay, and we'll jump back over to the designer, and any minute now, that should pop into this list. There you go. There's the demo business hours we just created. So we can now select that. We could select an audio file, say after hours. There we go. Okay, and for the purpose of the demo, we'll just disconnect. Okay, so let's go ahead and save that one. Okay, so you can see how easy it is just to add a forgotten item. You can do that for business hours. You can do that for holidays, and you can do that for queues as well. So if you forget any of those, you can just jump into the tabs, create the item, and then come back here and it will pre-populate that for you. So let's just have a quick look at holidays. So let's enable holidays. Let's give it an audio file. We'll leave that at disconnect for now. And again, we've got one defined there, but we want to specify a new one. So what we can do, very similar, let's go demo holidays. Again, make sure it's in the same pool. Let's add that. We've got our container now. So let's add Christmas for an example. Jump to the 25th. Well, that's going to be seen on the following day. End 26, so that's the entire day from midnight to just before midnight at the end of that day. So let's add that in. Okay, and we will save that. Okay, the other thing we could do, because holidays usually entail adding quite a few items, so another thing we can do is we can actually bulk import those. So if I just click download CSV file, pop that on the desktop, and we'll go demo. Okay, there it is. Let's open that up. So right now I've got some pre-populated items in there that you can see there. The CSV will point to this, and we'll add basically two groups, bulk add one, bulk add two, and we'll add the same holidays to each of them. So let's just go ahead and do that. Okay, so now we click bulk add, we've got our CSV ready. We've added all our holidays that we want. We open, and you can see here we've got bulk add 1 and bulk add 2. So those are now populated for saving. So while that's happening, we'll jump back to the designer. We should now have our demo holidays that we created. There you go. Okay, so we can now select that and we're good to go. So let's save that. So while that's saving, we can actually come down here now, and we might actually want to turn this from a basic workflow into an IVR. So we can actually do that with the flick of a button. Let's grab an audio file for that. If we can find one. Here we go. So that's the root of the IVR. Let's put that in there. Okay. So what we can do now is we can just add a few options. Okay, we can give them DTMF responses like so, and let's just add one more than 4, just so we can see that we can do more than the 4 that we're restricted to in the native interface. So where it says here voice response required, that's not entirely true, so we will fix that in a later release, but for now let's just pop some things in here. I don't know, dial by name, we might want to transfer that to UM for an IVR. Let's just select some cues for this. Okay, there we go. Right, so we've got 5 options now, but additionally what we might well want to do is we might want to add a sub option, so I can do that. That gives me this additional interface here, so I can now select the audio for that option. So we'll put a test audio file in there. So when I press 1, it's going to play this audio file, and then these are going to be the valid options. So again, I can add more. I can do more than the 4. I can go up to 10 of those. Let's just do 3 for argument's sake, and grab the cues. Right, okay, so now we've created an IVR. Okay, we were using a transfer straight to a queue, but now we're adding options. Okay, so I can just jump up here and save that now. Okay, that's saved. And there you go. So what I'll just show you as well is I've got a pre-configured one. So here's our demo IVR here. If I go down here, you can see very similarly. We've got 6 root options, and then the support option has 5 other options within it. So that's how simple that is. If you were using the native tools, there'd be a few places you would be jumping around. So firstly, you'd have to jump into the Skype for Business control panel. You'd need to create your groups. Okay, you'd need to create your queues. You'd need to do that before you get to the workflow stage. Likewise, if you needed business hours, I've got an example here, you'd need to create your time range, assign the hours to it, and also similarly holidays. So you'd need to make sure that those things were done first. Then you jump into here. Okay, so this opens a third interface. All right, so you then create either your standard hunt group, as we saw, in CoreFlow Manager, or an interactive one which I've called IVR mode. Okay, this one here, so this is the one we've actually just created, the demo. Okay, so you can see here right away, because we've now got more than 4 responses, we can no longer edit this within the native interface. Okay, so jumping back out, if I go new, I'll just show you what that looks like. If we come down to the bottom here, so there's predefined responses essentially. So response 1, 2, 3, and 4. Okay, and if we look, you can see again predefined 1 to 4 within response 4. So we're quite restricted in that regard. Okay. So that's just a bit of a look at how you would do it in the native tools. Okay, so we haven't looked at queues yet, so that's pretty stock standard, looks very similar. Basically, create your queue, add some agents to that queue. You can order them. Again, groups. Very similar to the native tool. Create your group, add users to the group. Like you can in the CoreFlow Designer tab, if you start pre-populating a queue and realize you haven't created the group, you can jump into the group, create the group, and it will become populated over here for you to use. Some additional things that I've added are numbers, for one. So as I mentioned, what that does is it pulls in all of your assigned numbers and also looks at your unassigned number ranges and compares the two and basically creates a table of assigned and unassigned numbers. So you can see there's a workflow there, there's a user, and that one's unassigned. And if you need to, you can search those. Additionally, a feature that is really in an alpha stage and will be worked on a little bit further once we get the release of the core response group management features. But the idea here is so you can also manage users and you can create policy templates. So that means you may have an executive policy, a standard user, etc., which is a combination of all of these policies. It also exposes additional items that aren't exposed in the native tools that are only accessible via PowerShell. So this feature will come a little bit later on, but you can see what we're trying to achieve here. We're just trying to make it a little bit more simpler to create a user off a predefined template. Okay, so that's pretty much the demo. Hope you enjoyed it, and do jump across to our website, which is theucguys.com, and have a look at the product a little bit further, and maybe download the beta demo that's available there. Thank you.
Okay, so when is CoreFlow Manager going to be available? Right now, we're currently in a beta. It's a reasonably functional beta. Most of the functionality is there. There's just some polishing touches that need to be made to make the interface a little bit more intuitive. I'm targeting to release this in November this year, and looking to release that at US $49. And what that will give you is four activations, essentially. So if you had four management servers, you can activate this on four management servers before you have to purchase another license. If you want to jump on board the beta, we'll give you a 50% discount on release. All we ask is that you provide us some constructive feedback on the product, whether it be bugs, feature requests. And if you want to grab some more information and actually download it, you can see the link there on the screen there. So it's ucguys.com/CoreFlow Manager. All right, thank you very much for having me on. I'll just now introduce Josh Bellock, and Mark Vale will jump back on as well, and we'll have a bit of a chat around some new Skype for Business features that have been coming out.
Hello, everyone. My name is Josh, and thanks for having me on, Mark. I appreciate it. Josh Blaylock, I guess, would be the name there. And today we're going to be talking a little bit about hybrid, the world of hybrid. And I've got a little bit of an agenda, which I haven't included. I'm going to go and kind of go through these and play it by ear, because I think that's a funner way to do it. So who am I? I am currently a senior Microsoft UC technical consultant with Integration Partners. Very recent change, been a few weeks now, but it's been a fun adventure so far. So that's my current role. On social media, you can find me on Twitter at GetCSJosh. You can also find me on LinkedIn at that non-friendly link right there. And then my YouTube channel is GetCSJosh as well. Got some interesting content there for you. And then, of course, on occasion, I blog, but it has been a while, and I need to catch back up there. So last bit about me, I wrote a handy little free hybrid handbook on Skype for Business. So, which, you know, falls right in line with what we're talking about today. Hybrid kind of is a topic I like. So we're going to dig into that a bit. That's just a free download out on the TechNet Gallery. So next up here, who is my target audience for this topic? Silly, corny joke at the beginning there. Of course, obviously anyone watching, but on a more serious note, we're kind of expecting a level 200 here, someone who knows what Skype for Business is, someone who knows what Office 365 is, and has kind of heard the notion of hybrid, combining the two environments and gaining the benefits that there are to be gained from doing so. So yeah, we just want you to have general knowledge of both those environments. And you know, if you're looking to streamline your UC deployment or potentially cut costs or simplify costs, all depending on how you deploy things, this could be a good presentation for you. Otherwise, you're welcome to stick around and just laugh a little bit. So either way, thanks for watching. Let's move on to the next slide. Hybrid, definitely. You know, some people start to think of some kludgy environment where you kind of mash things together and it looks a little funny, a little Frankensteinish, right? And that's not what we're talking about with hybrid here. The big deal is that you're essentially setting up federation between your on-prem environment of Skype for Business or Link Server 2013 if you haven't upgraded yet, which you should if you haven't. But anyway, putting that aside, it allows you to federate with a Office 365 tenant, assuming that you are using the same SIP address in your tenant that you have in play on your Skype for Business on-prem environment. So that's kind of how what the glue is that connects the two environments. It is a federation that happens. In order to allow this to fully work, though, you also need to deploy a Azure AD Sync, which you can achieve single sign-on if you want to deploy Active Directory Federation services as well. But that is extra hardware, extra work, more moving pieces. A lot of people like the benefits of single sign-on, but I have seen quite often that the single sign-on piece is just skipped and people just use Azure AD Sync to synchronize their user accounts from their on-prem Active Directory to their Office 365 tenant. Once your accounts are all synced up, then you can start using things like Exchange Online in a hybrid environment scenario and Skype for Business Online. So those are the essential building blocks that need to be in place to get a hybrid environment up and running. I'm not doing a deep dive into all the technical nitty gritty of how to accomplish that today. This is a little more high level, again, level 200. And so we're just gonna talk about these concepts at a higher level here. Once you have hybrid set up though, you then have the option of having your Skype for Business users homed on-prem or homed in Skype for Business Online. This is really handy depending on your needs. If you have users with more advanced enterprise voice needs, they're going to stay home on-prem, where they can utilize things like response groups, call admission control, other advanced enterprise voice concepts. If you've got users that really just need to be able to call out to the PSTN and receive calls over the PSTN, but you want them to still be part of your same environment here that you've set up, then you can probably home them in Skype for Business Online. And you'll have, you know, you might not need as big of an environment on-prem if you take advantage of an online, you know, a federated hybrid environment like this. So that's kind of the premise of how hybrid looks at a very high level. You've got your on-prem still. You've now got Office 365 with Skype for Business Online. The two of them talk. You've got users in both places. They can interact with each other just like they would if you were all on-prem. But now you're reaping other potential benefits that we'll dive into a bit more here. All right, now that I've already touched on some of these things, let's talk a little bit more about why you would adopt a hybrid model in the first place. One of the first things here is that it may simplify your operations and administration over your overall environment. You know, if you're maintaining an on-prem presence, then clearly you're still going to have to maintain operations and administration of that environment. However, that environment may be shrunken the word, or would we say shrink? Yeah, you may be able to shrink the environment to a much smaller on-prem environment, thereby, you know, decreasing the footprint of areas that you need to patch servers on or upgrade later or monitor actively. By enlisting a Skype for Business online presence, you know, in a hybrid scenario with your on-prem presence, you're able to simplify things, because once you're online, you do have to manage your users and some of their settings and their licenses, but the responsibility of the infrastructure behind that online environment now falls in the hands of Microsoft. They're managing the servers, they're updating the servers, they're rolling out new features, they're monitoring it. They're doing all those pieces, which takes a huge load off of you. So that's kind of where you get some simplified operations and administration. Your cost structure, that gets streamlined a lot too. Instead of having to factor in the cost of servers, networking costs, other costs such as licensing, whatever other costs you can conceive of that may be wrapped into an on-prem environment, a lot of that goes away, and you start simply just accounting for your licensing costs with Office 365. It becomes a lot more simple. Leveraging other services that are available in the cloud, like Skype Meeting Broadcast, is a big thing that comes to mind. Currently, the type of meetings that you have available in on-prem, you can do large meetings for people that are, you know, for meetings where you want to, you know, have up to 1,000 participants. And that usually involves a separate pool to set up just for large meetings. But that 1,000 users is really kind of where you max out there. Let's say you want to bring in the ability to broadcast something to a much larger group of people. Maybe you're a company of several thousand users. And instead of having to do individual, you know, status meetings with the company, or state of the unions, if you will, where you're kind of, you know, giving an annual or quarterly overview of the company to your employees, you could do one Skype meeting broadcast to 5,000, 6,000, 7,000 people, up to 10,000. Skype meeting broadcast is awesome. That is a feature you cannot get if you're strictly on-prem. Once you've created a hybrid environment, though, suddenly that becomes a feature that can be used by people, you know, who might still be on-prem. So that, you know, other services are obviously a compelling reason to go to a hybrid model. Flexibility and placement of users is something that I already chatted a bit about, homing them online or homing them on-prem. You know, it really depends on their needs and their specific feature set that they require. Allowing for a gradual phased approach to Microsoft or to Office 365 users. This is becoming important for a lot of organizations. They want to be early adopters. They want to start taking advantage of some of the benefits, but they also have pretty advanced needs, specifically on the enterprise voice side, that Skype for Business Online cannot solve yet, even with Cloud PBX and PSTN calling. As awesome as those things are, and as many new features are being rolled out, and even up till today, there's some cool announcements along those lines, there still is not the full enterprise voice suite available in the cloud. And so organizations may want to start walking down this road, putting some of their more simple use case users in the cloud, while watching these feature sets be released one by one or month after month, watching parity catch up to the point where they might be able to move most of their workload into the cloud. But this maturity is something they've got to see realized a bit more before they get there. So a phased, gradual approach is something that really appeals to organizations like this, and hybrid allows you to do that. Licensing cost benefits. There are arguments to be made that, well, you know, you may not in the long run pay less for Office 365 than you would pay for on-prem. And again, this all depends on your needs and your requirements. There are benefits to be realized by bundling services together. For instance, getting an E5 license in Office 365, that gives you access to Exchange Online and SharePoint and OneDrive and Skype for Business Online and Cloud PBX and PSTN Conferencing. There's a whole bunch of these services that can be billed individually or grouped into one lump sum where you get price breaks. And depending on your needs on-prem, you may find at the end of the day that there are benefits to moving to a bundled package like that in the cloud. So all things to consider as you're eyeing up a hybrid model. Why not just completely move to Skype for Business Online if it's so great? A few good reasons here. Maybe you've got existing contracts or investments in your on-prem infrastructure, specifically around voice and voice carriers. You might not be able to just yank all your users out of that infrastructure and put them in the cloud. You may have to do that a year down the line or a couple years down the line. In the meantime, you can start that move and start planning and start taking advantage of some features with hybrid. Modern voice does not have feature parity yet, as we just touched on. You're not going to get all the advanced enterprise voice needs that you may have in the cloud yet. You'll get some, but not all. So you might have to take a hybrid approach. PSTN calling, only available in the US and the UK right now. In the UK even is very recent. It's been available in the US for, I think, since December 1st of 2015. But the UK was a recent rollout. And, you know, there are more countries to follow here, but, you know, two countries is pretty limiting if you're an organization that is deployed across many countries. So, you know, with a hybrid environment, some people can take advantage of PSTN calling, while others are still using your on-prem voice infrastructure. If you are a company that has adopted persistent chat and seriously use that tool, that's not in the cloud yet. I don't know if it will be. So, you know, persistent chat, something that you, if you need it for a while, you may need to hang out on-prem for a while. The story of that is yet to be fully realized. Advanced monitoring and reporting requirements. There are some great third-party tools out there, as well as built-in tools to Link and Skype for Business for monitoring and reporting and spitting out amazing dashboards for your on-prem environment. Some of those tools will start to touch on Office 365, but not all of them are there yet. Not all of them are integrated. And while Microsoft is making some cool strides toward getting more monitoring and reporting and dashboards into the Skype for Business Online admin portal, it's still not a fully realized suite of tools yet. So if you've got those type of advanced needs, then you're going to have to, you know, consider hybrid for a while. Regulatory and compliance requirements. If you are a company that has specific concerns there, you know, oftentimes putting things in the cloud is not really something that most companies are ready to just jump right into. They really need to make sure they're covered for HIPAA or any of the other, you know, compliance requirements that might come up. I'm not going to dig deep into those because they are vast and numerous. Then there's just a general discomfort with putting all your eggs in one basket. Office 365 is great. Skype for Business Online is awesome, but it is still a work in progress. There are still many features that are being rolled out. It is perfectly acceptable for many organizations, but there are many organizations that just don't feel that it's there, that it's reached that level of maturity that makes them feel warm and fuzzy about just dropping everything on-prem and putting it all into the cloud. Being hybrid allows you to be more comfortable with having one foot in each pond for a while, you know? So those are reasons why you might want to do hybrid instead of a complete move. Let's talk a bit about voice here. Voice configuration options. I've given some of my own friendly names to each of these options here. We've got what I call all in, AKA Cloud PBX with PSTN calling. We've got what I call a foot in each pool, which I just kind of said a second ago, and that's where you've got your Cloud PBX, but you also have on-prem PSTN connectivity. So people in the cloud are able to make calls, but they make those calls through your on-prem voice infrastructure. Head in the clouds, silly name, but this is kind of the nickname I've given to Cloud Connector Edition, which is a fairly new and very interesting beast all in itself. So let's talk a bit more about these. Cloud PBX with PSTN calling. This is where your Skype for Business deployment being on-prem is optional. You do not have to have a hybrid deployment to use Cloud PBX with PSTN calling. Your users are homed in Office 365 for this. The user leverages the Microsoft provided calling plan via PSTN calling. Very cool. So they're in the cloud, they're homed in the cloud. They do all of their modalities through the cloud. All their call control is through Cloud PBX, and they're making phone calls via Microsoft's provided calling plans. Simplified billing. It gives very minimal control of the voice infrastructure, though. And by minimal, I mean none. I mean, that's all controlled by Microsoft. So anyone that's a bit of a control freak and wants to maintain control over their user's voice infrastructure, you're going to have to get comfortable with taking your hands off the wheel and let somebody else do that. This also, again, like I mentioned a minute ago, only in the US and the UK. So if you're an organization that's got users in the US and in Brazil, well, your US users might be able to do this, but you're going to have a different solution for the users in Brazil because they're not going to have PSTN calling yet. Cloud PBX with on-prem PSTN connectivity. For the Cloud PBX with on-prem, it's just what it sounds like. Your users, again, are, well, for one, you have to have a hybrid environment. You have to have an on-prem deployment for this. The user sits in Office 365, all right? So the user's up there, they're hanging out in the cloud, they're happy. When they make their call, Cloud PBX is their call control mechanism. It's sending that call actually back down to their on-prem environment through their voice infrastructure that already exists there. And if you've gotten a Avaya PBX or some other, you know, on-prem IP PBX setup, and you're sending your calls back on-prem that way. That's what this is. It gives you greater control over the voice infrastructure, excluding the signaling path. Signaling actually is still going up through Office 365 and coming back down, but your media doesn't have to traverse that same path. Your media will go straight from the user over to your on-prem voice infrastructure. So that's pretty cool. Available to all hybrid customers. So, you know, varied geographies here isn't as much of a concern. Lastly, Cloud Connector Edition. This is, like I said, a very interesting and different beast. There is no existing on-prem Skype for Business environment when you're deploying CCE. You cannot have a hybrid environment for this before starting out. You will have hybrid afterwards, but you do not have it to start. Your user is homed in Office 365. The user leverages an on-prem voice infrastructure that you already have in place via the CCE deployment. So what we're really talking about here is pretty much what we just said with on-prem PSTN calling, except that since you don't already have a Skype for Business deployment, you're going to be deploying a very minimal pre-packaged Skype for Business deployment on-prem. And there is this whole set of requirements for that. And it then routes your calls to that existing voice infrastructure. What would possess you to launch this? This would be you've got users in the cloud, you've got a voice infrastructure you want to use, you don't have an on-prem Skype for Business deployment, but you want to bridge that gap to where those users can use your on-prem voice infrastructure. Maybe it's because you're in one of those countries that doesn't have PSTN calling yet. That's a compelling reason to use it. So that's kind of why you would go down this path and start thinking about that. You do have less control over the advanced enterprise voice features. Even though you've got this technically on-prem deployment now, you don't have control over the dial plans or any of that stuff. That stuff still sits in the cloud. All right. So you have the infrastructure sitting in your environment that you really don't get to customize or do much with. There's cost savings to be realized with this because you do have to pay for your infrastructure to deploy it, which is a single big beefy Hyper-V server. You got to pay for your Windows licenses, all that stuff. But the download for CCE itself is a free download from Microsoft. You're not paying for all the licensing involved with some big sprawling Skype for Business on-prem deployment. So that's that. I want to give a couple little overviews of CCE here, a high-level concept. As you can see, we've got our Skype for Business Online users hanging out in the cloud, Office 365. They go to make a call. The call comes down. to the CCE instance, which then goes and hits that existing PBX or gateway and eventually goes down to the PSTN network. You've got users that are sitting on-prem. They maybe have a legacy, you know, phone sitting on their desk that is not link-enabled. They can make a call. It goes right to that PBX out to the PSTN. So this kind of shows where CCE fits into this environment for your Office 365 users. Again, this is a little bit of that signaling versus media flow for CCE. As you can see here, a user that's sitting on-prem, they're an Office 365 Skype for Business Online user. The signaling traverses up to Office 365, gets sent back down to CCE, and then from CCE, the signaling goes out to the PSTN gateway, whatever that may be, and out to your PSTN. The media, however, goes straight from the user to that CCE and then out to the PBX or PSTN gateway or whatever. So, and the media does not have to go all the way up to Office 365 and back down. Good stuff. That's kind of a very high level overview of how things work there. All right, lastly, let's talk about some current challenges and considerations with this. Extension dialing, it's a problem for voice users that are using PSTN calling or CCE. The dial plans for those two use cases, there is a single dial plan. It is in Office 365 and you cannot modify it. So because you can't modify it, you don't get to deal with setting up extensions for your users and all that. A bit of a complaint for some organizations at this point, but something to be aware of. Another point, tenants. They are currently tied to a single geographic location. If you set up a tenant in the US, then that tenant is you based in the US and the infrastructure that you're accessing is based in the US. But you may have users across your organization that log into that tenant from across the globe. There's obviously a little bit of latency and multiple hops that you have to deal with at that point. And it's something to consider. You know, I think this is going to be addressed. I think probably something Microsoft is working on as far as getting a tenant to be spread across different geographies for organizations like this. But at the moment, it's still something you need to think about and plan on. Next up, PSTN calling. Again, I've already said this two other times, only in the US or the UK. So if you've got a voice strategy you're planning for, you need to think about that if you were hoping to leverage PSTN calling. And then lastly, if you're using PSTN calling for full voice capabilities, QoS between Microsoft servers and your office can only be achieved with Azure Express Route, okay, which costs a ton of money. You think about it, the calls are happening across the internet from your office to Skype for Business Online. Typically, you would control QoS and quality of your network in general in-house from the endpoint, from the users to your voice infrastructure and then out to the PSTN, et cetera. Well, now that you got, you know, something up in Microsoft servers and something on-prem, you've got traffic that has to traverse the internet. And the only way to guarantee QoS or quality really at all there is to put Azure Express Route in. And that is a significant chunk of change to bake into your plans. So that's it for the list of challenges and considerations. I'm sure there are others you might be able to think of, but these are some of the big ones to try to chew on when you're planning this out. So summary, Skype for Business Online, awesome. However, most orgs that I've seen, if they're using it right now, they are taking a hybrid approach for all the reasons we just discussed. Cloud PBX with PSTN calling, there is huge potential there, but very limited geographically currently, very limited geographic availability currently. So think about that, plan for it. Lastly, adopting a phased approach is going to be your best bet for migrating from on-prem to Skype for Business Online, especially with those voice features. It's getting there a little bit more each month. New features are being released and talked about, but we have not reached feature parity. So in summary, start adopting now, but be wary of putting all your eggs in one basket. And that is what I've got to say about hybrid. I'm not sure how I did in time there, Mark. I tried to not get carried away, but that's it. Thank you.
Thanks, guys, for presenting on the Scout Show. I hope everyone watching, who's watching this video, has enjoyed the sessions. And we're now moving on to general discussions of what's been happening within Scout for Business world in the last month or so. So if you were watching Jamie Starks and Sean Wilson's Scout for B cast this morning or this afternoon, depending on your time zone, you would have noticed or realized that they released a preview into Hunt Groups and Organization also attended. So, which is really interesting, really, because Hunt Groups aren't going to be called Hunt Groups. They're going to be called Call Queues in the cloud. And I believe, make looking for my notes, they're going to support both on-premise and online extensions, I believe. Is that right?
That is correct. That's what I understood from it. This is, as you might have noticed, based on my presentation earlier, this is a topic close to my heart, and I'm really looking forward to see actually what comes out. But it looked quite promising based on his demo. Obviously, it's going to be the first iteration, so probably not fully featured. But I certainly think it's going to mean that businesses can more easily move to the cloud, because this has been probably a big limiting factor, only having DDI in, or DIDs as you guys call them. We call them DDIs in this part of the world for some reason.
We call them DDIs too, so, UK too.
Oh, do you? Okay, yeah, so, okay, there you go. What?
Who calls them DDIs?
Yeah, so, I don't know, but Microsoft does.
Perhaps that's just to differentiate.
It must be the Canadians. Maybe the Canadians do it.
Maybe.
Yeah. So the key points I took from the auto attendant demonstration was that it's available in 27 languages for text to speech, I believe, and
yep,
also
correct.
12 for native speech, I believe.
Yeah, voice recognition.
So that's good. We don't have any details on what languages they are, but I probably think it's going to be the main ones. Perhaps English will be the first one. But there
it's
we
probably
are.
Not Swahili right away.
No, or Welsh. So I'm from Wales, a small country, attached to England for its sins. And we don't see Welsh come across in any types of translation. Cool. So
we have the same problem down here in New Zealand. We have some interesting results when you turn on transcribing in the voicemail.
But it's Australian down there, isn't it?
Well, you could say that, but we wouldn't be too happy about it.
No, I don't.
Yeah, we have to use Australian. It's not far off. It's quite a neutral Australian.
Ah, okay. So, moving on, I guess the latest CU for Skype for Business on-premise now includes video-based screen sharing. So, Josh, since I pinched this from your Skype for B recap, what is video-based screen sharing?
So video-based screen sharing, as opposed to sharing your screen via RDP like you would have done before, this is just another media stream. Like we're streaming video right now, you're sharing your screen that way, and it's apparently much more efficient than doing it via RDP. So
interestingly, if you, I was watching the Skype Operations Framework videos, and I think Cornel Bullins was on doing the network readiness talk, and he suggested that when we calculated our bandwidth for VBSS is to actually just use the RDP numbers, bizarrely enough. So I guess when screen sharing is negotiated, I guess both protocols are negotiated, so it scales back, perhaps.
I think it's relatively, it's only slightly more bandwidth, but much higher frame rate, as I understand it. So it's not a huge amount over the top of RDP, I believe, the massive amount of additional frame rate that you get.
Okay. That's
much smoother, much smoother experience, you know, so I'm glad to see it making its way further in than it initially started out, but it's still it's still pretty limited to the scenarios where you're going to see it come into play. You know, organizations that are not on the latest and greatest clients plug and play or click to play, then it's not really going to be something people are going to get to experience for a while until they really start updating their clients. So.
Yeah, so but we can really start pushing Skype for Business now as a serious contender to WebEx. Because obviously the screen sharing was the crux of the Lincoln and Skype meeting in the early days.
Right.
So that's pretty cool. The other release was Busy on Busy Options. So this has been a long-standing legacy PBX feature that everybody's been screaming for since, what, OCS? So it's finally made it into Skype for Business in the, was it June or July? I can't remember. Well, we're in August now. So July
2016, yeah.
So what does that bring to Skype then for people who are maybe on a call or maybe they don't want to answer a call right now?
Yeah, so, I mean, you know, you get to decide whether you want to send a call over to your voicemail directly or there's a couple different ways that you can route the call. A couple different behaviors you can choose when a call comes in. You're currently on a call, but yeah, I'd love to. I saw a couple of good blog posts shared this week actually on that. A couple of people have gone through and documented implementing this and using it, etc.
Yeah. And, so is it just a matter of deploying the CU and you've got Busy on Busy, or do you have to enable it anywhere?
No, I think I'm trying to recall from when I went over it the other week on the recap, but it seemed like it was a little more of an involved process than just deploying the CU and switching it on.
Yeah.
There's more involved.
Yeah, there's definitely a few steps that you've got to run through. You've got to enable it in the voice policy, and among other things. I think it requires a restart of the services as well from memory, and then applying that policy to the user.
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah, it was a multi-stepped approach, and I remember thinking that, looking at it, I'm like, well, this is cool, but my goodness, could they have not made it a little bit easier to turn on?
It's Microsoft, right?
You know, yeah.
That's the next update. It'll be easier.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. One of those general fixes, and
yeah.
At least we got it.
I actually did a quick Twitter poll on the new features released in the CU. I'm Busy on Busy, or Bob, as people sort of come to call it now. That came out on top, so it's a well-received addition, finally, into...
I think it's definitely required. It's not something I'd probably use. I quite like the ability to see who's trying to get hold of me and decide what to do with it myself, but definitely a requirement, I think.
Some satisfaction in pressing that ignore button, isn't it, when somebody rings?
Very, very true.
So the last feature released in that CU was multiple emergency numbers. So for people who don't use Enhanced 911, well, E911 has now, traditionally you could only have one emergency number configured, and you'd have dial masks, which would basically translate anything that you dial to the emergency number. We now support multiple ones, so for countries that have distributed emergency services, which is a nice welcome update, I think. It's probably one of my my favorites. Probably not high up on the list of many deployments, but it's certainly you know, a nice addition from Microsoft to include that.
Yeah, it certainly sounds like
it's
required.
Yeah. So we don't have E911 in the UK. We just have a single number, 999. But when we start going to EMEA countries, they have like 112 for fire or 111 for police. They don't have a centralized emergency call center. So this is really cool. So we can actually identify emergency calls now going through Skype and through your SPC, which is cool. And obviously we can attach the location information to it as well, so people can actually find you in the smoke.
Exactly. So yeah, it's, you know, a lot of companies don't give much thought to the E911 or emergency component of, you know, replacing their PBX with Skype for Business, etc., moving to the cloud. But it, you know, it's a huge component that gets overlooked too often. So once they realize it's been overlooked, having having expanded services and abilities like this are big. So, yeah.
Anybody actually on the same topic of this? Anybody know what the 911 policy is for Cloud PBX? I believe, or I heard rumors that you actually call a Microsoft call center and they transfer you. Is that right?
Yeah. At this point, it's I don't know too much about it, but it, I mean, you know, there's the ability there, but it is a static setup like that.
I can help you there actually, because I was just having a look at it the other day. It actually, when you purchase it, this is roughly off the top of my head, but essentially you've got to create locations, and they automatically pull through from obviously map data or something like that, because it verifies them before you can save them. And then I think you just assign those to the user. Yeah, and you have to have that to actually enable the user, I believe.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool. So Skype for Business for Mac is obviously the one of the hot topics in the last couple of months, with Microsoft releasing the brand new Mac client in preview. Has it made general availability yet? I must admit that I am a Mac phobic.
Yes, so to be honest. I've got an iPhone, but I don't do Macs.
I have an iPad, but the battery's been flat in it for about 3 months.
I've avoided Macs for personal use, but I have not been able to ignore them at any organizations I've been at. People love their Macs, and so it's becoming a key component of adoption within orgs, to make sure
needed.
Mac is as Microsoft has been putting it, a first-class citizen in the Skype for Business world.
So I believe,
it's definitely required.
I believe the Mac client is it's been rebuilt from scratch. It's no longer a traditional app. It's now built on, is it UC WA? Is it a web app on Mac?
Yeah, I did hear that. Yeah, I think it does use the some of the web protocols.
Right.
So
they're currently, you know, just released phase two of the preview. And, you know, for anyone wanting to suddenly get into the preview, apparently you can't. The preview's full, so don't try to get on the preview anymore for the Mac client. But phase two was released recently, and they're targeting phase three pretty quick here, which I think would round out the end of the product. And then I think they're still shooting for GA, you know, December or fall sometime, maybe.
I wonder how long it'll take for Windows 10 app to go the same route, so you don't have the MSI or C2R deployment of the Skype client. You'll just have the web-based version. Maybe WebRTC will finally come into Skype for Business.
What do you guys think of the Mac client sort of layout? Because it's obviously quite different to the Windows client, and I kind of would have thought Microsoft would be wanting to keep the user experience similar. So does that mean this is the way they're going to be going with the Windows app, or is there going to be a universal app similar, or you know, what do you think?
I guess when I sat in Office 365 Ignite back in February 2015 in Amsterdam, the message from Microsoft was, we are moving to Skype for Business rather than having Link, because people use the Skype consumer app and they want a consistent experience between consumer and business, so they can move between devices and different operating systems with a relatively similar experience. So I would imagine that message probably hasn't disappeared. And
I think that's coming through. Yeah. I think that's coming through in the Mac client, isn't it? Because it is probably a bit more similar to the consumer version than the Skype for Business Windows experience.
So I definitely see it following suit. So the Windows follow the suit of the client, the Mac client, sorry. But the other interesting development is the integration in Office 365 portal for Skype. So you can obviously now you can have web-based chats and what have you within your web browser. So I see them pushing that as a more provident in communications right now. So yeah, it'd be interesting to see what comes up. I don't know if anyone has any different thoughts. In a couple of other things, Josh, when you did your presentation and you said that PSTN calling is available in the US and UK only, you forgot Puerto Rico. That's really important.
Well, I didn't forget it, but I think it's silly that they call it out separately. I'm like, Puerto Rico is supposed to be part of the U.S., and It's also like a, what is it, volume license only or something set up. So I left that out on purpose, but
No worries. But an interesting one.
Hey, but we could go further with that, Mark. We could say, well, actually, PSTN calling is available worldwide if you have an on-premise gateway.
Yeah, absolutely. So, and I actually see a lot of people, or a lot of businesses rather, in the UK adopting that strategy, at least in the upcoming years. It's going to be more of a case of let's dip our toes in the water, let's see what it can do. But they want a fallback. If it doesn't work, it's not cost them a bunch of money in licenses that they have to pay for a year if they don't like them.
Right. And they can just, you know what would be really cool?
Go on, man.
What would be really cool if Office 365 became the SBA?
Yeah, that would be awesome.
That would be a nice addition.
Yeah. Or if Azure supported virtual SBCs, and you could do virtual SBC as a service, that would be.
I'm sure that'll come.
I think that's probably on the horizon. Yeah.
What else have we got? So before we jump onto Skype operations framework, I wanted to pick up again on you, Josh. Sorry, I'm not trying to correct you. about the persistent chat in Skype for Business Online not being available. So I'm going to put this out there and suggest that Office 365 groups is the alternative and the better alternative of that for persistent chat. So it's a much more collaborative and immersive environment, and you can see that there's definite Yammer technology gone into Office 365 groups. And with the acquisition of LinkedIn, I could probably see Yammer disappearing in the future with that technology merged into Office 365 groups. So any comments on that? Do you think that's a reasonable assessment of where it's going, or do you actually see persistent chat coming out in the future?
I think that's where it's going. Yeah. I think you're right, that's where it's going. I was a persistent chat fan. I liked it. I really wanted to see them bake that into the Mac clients and everything. But as much as they've batted around the topic and kind of stepped around the bush on that one, I fully believe the path they're heading is persistent chat's going away completely. This approach of what you just said, Office 365 groups.
It's certainly a second class citizen. It sort of feels like a second class citizen in the product. There hasn't been a hell of a lot of development in it, I suppose.
No, I guess not. And what would be really cool is if the Skype for Business client actually integrated with Office 365 groups, so that when somebody posts a message in there, you get a toast to say that, you know, that the message has been posted in your group. I think that would signal the end of persistent chat completely at that point.
Yeah, I think so.
But I also think that Office 365 groups, and this is me going out on a whim here, will be the point of ingress to all your 365 apps and workloads in the future. So as we sort of move towards a cloud-only approach and do software as a service and what have you, I think we'll personally lose the identity of like Exchange and Skype for Business and SharePoint, and it'll just be a tool that you use within 365 groups, for instance. It'll just be a click to call, and that's what it is. You know, it's going to be through your browser, got a headset plugged in, but you know, it's Skype for Business in the back end, but nobody really cares anymore because
that makes sense. You know, it really is kind of a little UC hub. Groups are going to huddle around the group, you know, people are going to huddle in those groups and access everything from there. That's a really good assessment, I think. So,
be interesting to see. And then we could go into a whole conversation of bots and putting AI graphs on top of all that communication as well. We haven't got time for that. But Skype Operations Framework. So this was released a couple of weeks ago now, maybe 3 weeks ago. So a new website, www.skypeoperationsframework.com. And this is a whole bunch
Who's
of
read it? Who's read it? Who's read the whole thing?
I've read it. I've downloaded all the PowerPoints, watched all the video. No, I haven't really. this is a dedicated site of resources that helps you guide your customer through the journey from probably on-premise legacy PBX into the world of Skype for Business Online, Cloud PBX, and what have you. So it's a really cool piece of free resource. Definitely check it out, download it, watch the videos that are happening right now. But this is strictly focused for online deployments. But I guess we could use some of the methodologies that they're putting out there, especially for network assessments or what have you, for on-premise as well. But it'd be in, do you see any merit in producing Skype Operations Framework for on-premise deployments? Because I personally feel that Microsoft are going to ignore this area for as long as they can.
Yeah, I think there certainly is merit in it, and there'll be a lot of crossover in there right now, I would imagine. But it's interesting that it's called the Skype Operations Framework. It doesn't mention the word online, but it is specifically targeted to online. So, I mean, obviously, Skype for Business, their aim is by the end of 2017 to be cloud first. Yeah. So it's obviously where they're going. They anticipate that everything's ultimately going to be in the cloud.
It's interesting that they excluded the for business in the in just Skype as well. Yeah. So, but that would have been a pretty long URL to type in, wouldn't it? Skype for Business Operations Framework.com. That would have been huge. So Michael Lamontagne, he released a script to the Technic Gallery a while ago, and I must admit, he did ping me and say, "Do I want to test it?" I said yes, and hands up, I am sorry, I've not got around to it yet, but. Invoke SFB contacts. Has anybody actually played around with this at the moment?
Not I, but I've read about it. It looks really good. We quite often get questions about this from customers about how you import and export contacts. So it's a great addition.
Yeah. No,
right.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So I wish I had
same
that
boat. I read up on it. You know, in preparation for when I talked about it as well, and just kind of dug into it a bit, and it. Great tool. Like you said, it's a common problem. People get migrated or moved, and the first thing they complain about is their contacts. So having a good way to handle that via script is huge.
Yeah, no, it's awesome. And for me, it was released about probably 4 or 5 weeks too late. So, so some people may know I've switched jobs, and I had a bunch of contacts in my previous Skype for Business client that I wanted to export out. And in the end, I did it the old-fashioned way, but I wish I had this script back then. But hey-ho, excellent addition, Michael. Thank you very much for your contributions to the community.
Indeed.
And the last topic, I guess, before we wrap this up for this episode is the LinkedIn acquisition. And the bots seem to be the latest thing. So thoughts on the LinkedIn acquisition? Is that an admission publicly from Microsoft that Yammer probably wasn't the best purchase?
Yeah. Or do you think it could well be, yeah. I mean, it's a massive acquisition, and I think it's going to be very useful to them long term.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I did not see this coming, to be honest. When I saw that headline that they were bought, especially for that dollar amount, it was
huge.
It was crazy. I couldn't believe that. I didn't know that was even in the works at all. So. Yeah. But yes, I think there's definite Yammer ramifications there.
Yeah. But is it interesting that it opens up a whole world of possibilities, I would imagine, especially with bots as well. So I can see Microsoft pushing the AI forward, and they'll put a bot layer across probably Office 365 and LinkedIn, and we'll get a whole personal graph against everybody's both in work and professional outside of work habits to probably improve that content and see what's important to people. They probably just bought the world's largest CRM database for recruiters.
Exactly. And imagine being able to search, your LinkedIn contacts directly from the Skype for Business client. That would be pretty powerful.
Oh yeah. And then, presence and all that type of stuff. You know, that's going to be awesome. If I ever,
yeah, I'm sure it will be. Very cool things up their sleeves from this acquisition that I'm, just not even seeing the big picture yet. I can't wait to see it unfold.
Yeah, it's going to be pretty cool. You imagine pinging out even meeting invites, to people that you haven't met before and the LinkedIn content, giving you information about the bios and all that sort of stuff before you go to the meeting.
Yeah.
Seamlessly in the Outlook client, there's just endless possibilities like that.
Yep.
Honestly, the LinkedIn messaging just sucks. So it'll be great to have that change, hopefully.
Skype for Business. Yeah.
Yeah.
So Yeah, it would be quite good. I guess broadcast meetings has a place in LinkedIn. They can do marketing messages and business messages directly in LinkedIn. I would imagine that would come. What I'd like to see probably is a bit more integration, a bit more tightly integration between different workloads within Office 365 and what have you. So at the moment, it all seems to be an app for this or a site for that, and I'd just like to see it all come together and just work as one unified solution. I suppose the last release announcement from Microsoft before this show was the introduction of Microsoft Stream. I must admit, I signed up, looked at it for 5 minutes, and just decided it was Office 365 video. Unless I'm very much mistaken, it's just been rebranded. But any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I haven't looked at it, to be honest. I've seen a few announcements around it. Yeah, but don't really know what it is, what it does.
Apparently, there's a little more, and I forget off the top of my head what the additional capabilities are there, but there are a little more capabilities with Stream. But the direction I see it going in, that I hope it goes in, is much the way you use Google Hangouts for, you know, and then upload it to YouTube automatically.
Yeah.
Once you're done with the broadcast, I really would love to see them use Stream to do your Skype meeting, your Skype for Business your meeting broadcast, and then automatically have that saved right to Stream and have it be publicly available.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's the thing. But I think Stream is for your organization at the moment only. It's a public channel.
Yeah.
But it's definitely something that I think we should get onto the product group for and suggest that as a priority development. And then we can have a business only style YouTube / Channel 9 type thing. Like publicly searchable video content to get your message out there without being behind a user or license firewall. It's an absolute massive gap there, and I think that would, you know, I think if that comes, it's going to be a real game changer, especially competing against the likes of Google Hangouts with YouTube integration and what have you. So
if they can bridge that gap, if they can get on that same plane with Google Hangouts as far as public broadcasts that are stored and available for playback.
So
that is a serious game changer. And I think that they're so close with this, they need to go the extra step to make it happen. So
with the development of in-meeting live transcription services from Bing, that's just going to make it even more awesome, right?
Yeah.
So a whole production tool online live broadcast. Come on, Microsoft, let's get it done. I think that's it for today on this episode. Thank you, Andrew. Thank you, Josh, for your time in presenting on this show.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
No worries. And before we close off, the next episode will be available in September. We have special guest Ken Lasko, aka The Hoff. He will be coming on presenting to us. And I also have Sonus and Nectar coming on to do a joint presentation on their integration between Nectar's networking monitoring suite and Sonus to do true end-to-end Skype for Business network monitoring. So right from the PSTN gateway all the way down to the client. So that'd be quite an interesting presentation. You can join us in September for that. And that's it for the show. Thank you very, very much for watching, and we'll see you again next time. Goodbye.